We're coming to you live from the future.
Whoa. We're in the future. But somehow also the past?
Who knows? I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Liz.
And you're about to listen to our podcast. And we just wanted to tell you a little bit of a little something. Going into season two, we changed our name, as you probably see on your podcast app, to Wisteria Gaze. But we just wanted to let you know, don't be shocked if you hear the old name, because we used to have an old name. But now we are Wisteria Gaze.
And you can find us on social media at Twitter at Wisteria Gaze, on Instagram at Wisteria Gaze _ or WisteriaGaze.com.
So hit us up. That's
Hell
our new name.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Do it without laughing. That was beautiful, Liz.
Thank you.
Hey, Liz.
Hi, Mackenzie.
Oh, welcome to Desperate House Dykes.
Oh my god.
Thank you.
That was so sexual.
Sorry.
God, I'm like fully erect.
Yeah,
now.
I'm sorry. Whoa. I should have. Is that okay that I did that?
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, I'm. It is fully. Yeah, I consent to. You
I just feel that like this is a very trusting environment, and like I wouldn't do it if I didn't think like it was okay.
Yeah,
but
I want you to
be comfortable and cool, and tell me if it wasn't.
I am like so comfortable.
Thank you.
I am like spa levels of comfort with that right now.
Hey,
everybody, welcome to our podcast. That is not a sex podcast.
No. It could be, but we decided to talk about Desperate Housewives instead.
We were between two. We were at a fork in the road. We were between two podcasts, and so we went with Desperate Housewives.
Yeah.
And thank God we did, because we're on episode 17.
Holy shit. I was just, before we started recording, I was just, like, talking and reminiscing about when we first started this podcast. We were like, dude, if we do this, if we don't take breaks, if we upload weekly, we'll be done in, like, October. That's so far away. And now it's basically October right now.
Yes, it is. I hate time.
Yes, it's not real. It doesn't exist.
I hate how it has continued to march forward.
Yes.
But you know what? At least I have Desperate Housewives to get me through.
At least I have Desperate Housewives, and at least I have you.
Oh, that's romantic.
Yeah, I'm not trying to, like, one-up you or anything with my romance, but...
Holy shit, babe. Oh my god. Do you want to talk about this little sody?
Oh, I just want to, like, pop open the tab.
Yeah.
And just gulp it all down.
Gulp that
I just
want to
glorp it and schlorp it, you know?
Let's glorp and schlorp episode 17, entitled There Won't Be Trumpets. Hashtag Sondheim Watch. The name of this episode comes from the musical Anyone Can Whistle, which I don't know anything about. But I do know that this song is sung by a bunch of, like, Sondheim actors, like Bernadette Peters or I think it's Sutton Foster. Yeah, Patti LuPone, a Mandy Patinkin.
Ugh.
That's our Mandy. The John Mulaney reference, and that is this episode title. It premiered on April 3rd, 2005. It was written by John Pardee and Joey Murphy, who are producers of the show. They also wrote episode 7, which is actually the episode where Mama got hit.
Oh, well, it makes sense. Spoiler alert, because that was the last time we saw her.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's been 10 episodes. Holy shit.
10 fucking episodes.
They brought these guys in. They were like, hey, we dropped this storyline. Do you want to come back in 10 episodes later and pick it up?
No, I've talked about this in a previous episode. I think it's that they divvied out specific storylines, but didn't get, like, the episodes in order. So, like, writers were in charge of those storylines, but they had episodes, like... 7, 10, and 17, and they had to, like, figure out how to... They just assumed other people would work them in, but nobody else was told that those storylines were happening.
It does feel like, and we'll get into it, like, they just fully forgot about Mama existing, and then they were like, ooh, yeah, we should wrap this up so that people don't yell at us. And then, just to finish my little spiel up, it was also directed by Jeff Melman, who has directed quite a few episodes, but my favorite being, he directed the moment of Susan flying through the wall.
Oh, yes.
We open on Sacred Heart Hospital.
That looks is that
the one in Scrubs?
I wrote that in my notes. I said this looks like the Scrubs Hospital.
Wait, is it like the same set and everything?
I think it has to be.
I'm pretty sure that hospital's been used in like a lot of TV shows.
I'm starting a new headcanon where Scrubs and Desperate Housewives take place in the same universe.
I'm into that. Which Scrubs doctor do you think was Juanita's doctor? That just wasn't working that night, obviously.
JD.
JD,
This would be a JD case.
Classical JD. And this is how we're opening up our Scrubs spin-off podcast.
Yes.
We're going to try to compete with the one that Donald Faison and... oh my god, that lead actor's name.
Zach Braff.
Yes, Zach Braff.
I was like, Florence Pugh, Florence Pugh's boyfriend. Florence Pugh's boyfriend looks like her dad, Zach Braff.
That's a great, like, mind chart to go through. Yeah, yes. They host a Scrubs podcast, but obviously we're going to be better than them. We open on this hospital. We get a kind of eerie shot going down the hallway and a little bit of a monologue about what the night shift workers dream about, I guess.
Yeah.
The things that they want.
You know, like Gus dreams of quitting, Howard dreams of retiring at the tropics. You know, these characters that we've come to know and love here at the Sacred Heart Hospital. You'd have to watch Scrubs to really know these characters.
Yeah.
And how Ruth dreams of leaving her husband.
I wrote, Ruth Ann, you dyke, leave your husband. I love you. Also, did you recognize that actress?
No.
Liz.
What?
Guess what else she was in?
The L Word.
No, that's later.
I just always assume.
She was in Buffy. She was the roommate Buffy had at the beginning of season 4.
Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god.
She was Kathy, who's obsessed with Cher and Celine Dion, and Buffy hates her because she quote-unquote irons her jeans. Great episode.
Oh,
season 4, weak season.
You find
that
out
episode,
she is a demon.
You find
the
out
toenails,
demon.
They keep growing even in the bag.
Yes. Yes, it's a weak season 4, but that's a pretty good episode of season 4, I would say.
The first or second episode of
It was the first,
four.
Yeah. The Freshman. Yeah. It was entitled, I Love Buffy a Lot. But yeah, so she's, this actress who plays the nurse was in Buffy.
Holy shit.
I just wanted to see if you recognized her or not, because I know you also love Buffy.
But the monologue then pans to Mama, saying she has the most vivid dreams. She dreams of the drama. She dreams of sometimes catching Gabrielle and John Tucker. She dreams of being hit by the car. She dreams of the one day she'll be able to tell Carlos that Gabby is cheating on him. And then she just decides to wake up. Her eyes just shoot open. Good morning, Mama. Go back to bed. It's still nighttime.
Yeah, truly. It's been 10 episodes without her.
It has been 10 episodes. It has been months. She is walking around. She is not groggy. Her voice is a little scratchy. But she has no problem because she has her baby on the mind.
Why didn't she just press the like nurse button?
I don't know.
And also, wouldn't she not be able to walk? Aren't coma patients?
That's what I'm saying.
My knowledge is from the movie Kill Bill.
Yes.
Aren't coma patients, like, can't they not walk very well? Like, I know that the nurses exercise their legs, but, like, that's going to take you a while to walk.
Because if you spend months laying in bed, not walking, it's just, like, harder, you know?
So she also did that thing I hate in TV shows where they like rip their IV out. And I'm like, that's a needle. And people in TV shows are always like, oh, I'm so tough. I got to be somewhere. Yank. And I'm like, why the fuck did someone start that on a TV show? And now it's in every TV show.
If you want to see a really good depiction of how much it hurts to rip an IV out.
I don't want to see
Evil,
that.
Resident Evil. End of the Resident Evil first movie. Oh. She rips her IV out, but she's like, ow, you know, because it hurts.
I don't want to see that. So maybe my argument has turned into, I'm okay with this, that it's unrealistic. Basically, she's running around the hospital being like, where is anybody? Where is my son? And she sees that there was a phone, a payphone. And she's like, hell yeah, I'm going to rip my little IV out, Yankee Yankee, and I'm going to run over to it. She
also didn't have to rip out her IV.
She didn't. She did not have to. She was already walking so much with it. Whatever. But she slips on the wet floor and falls out of an open door into the stairwell and just fucking rockets down the stairs.
Jesus.
The shot of anxiety that hit my stomach watching her fall down the stairs made me kind of sad.
Yeah.
I was like,
I didn't
want to
like watch her die.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Also, like, the fact that Mary Alice comes in and is, like, even, she, like, says the mama knows that she's about to die, which, how terrifying must that feel?
Literally.
And, like, she knows she's going to die, and she sees this nurse, and she says, tell my son that his wife is cheating on him, and those are her last words, and then the nurse takes out earbuds, and she goes, what?
That was awful. The nurse just catching a smoke in the stairwell, and... And we'll see this later. She's kind of responsible for Mama's death.
Kind of. I think it would have been a lot more interesting if Mama got those words out to somebody who actually could hear
it. Yes, me too.
And then we get like another little Mary Alice monologue talking about heroes. And she talks about like some people like heroes because of their bravery, because they're daring. And then I stopped paying attention to what Mary Alice was saying because I realized Susan is doing her job. This is the first time since episode one.
I think so.
Like three.
One or two, yeah.
We've seen her doing her real job, which makes the Susan job count two.
Too,
like, because we're actually seeing her do the job. We're not just like seeing her hand off a card that she quote unquote made for Mike.
I have pulled my pants down and shat on Susan's art multiple times. I actually thought these looked kind of nice.
Yeah, I think
I was like, maybe watercolor is her medium, because this looked a lot nicer than the 2D line art she's been doing.
I can't wait for season four when she gets into Posca's.
And when season seven she goes through her expressionist period, it's gonna be really great. And then little Mikey arrives and tries to beg Susan to talk to him again, and he kisses her, and then we see it's a daydream.
Yeah.
And then there's sort of like a series of daydreams that are mostly all like Mike being like, Susan, I killed for you, and they kiss, and Mike holds a gun to her chest, and then they kiss. It's mostly these very dramatic scenarios, and then they make out. But then we get the real world.
Yes, we get the real world, and Mike is actually outside her door, and she is scared, and she flips out a little bit, and she hides behind the door, and he slips an envelope under, and he goes, listen, everything about me, the arrest, like, why I did what I did, the drugs, like, it's all in this envelope. And there's a cute moment where she takes it, and he goes, you probably should have waited till I left to do that, huh?
Because he could see the envelope coming in the house.
Yeah.
I thought that was cute, though, too, yeah.
But she has this envelope.
She has this envelope, and it will carry through the whole episode.
My note was, Mike is actually there, and she's Scooby-Doo 2 crawling around her house.
Yes, like Velma. Yes. Oh my gosh. And then we cut to the dumbest thing ever. Andrew is in the parking lot of his school, like hotboxing the shit out of his car. I have quite literally never seen a hotbox that intense in my life.
I feel like
that's
how it always is in movies, though.
Like, truly, like, you could barely see through the smoke. That's not how that works. At least, I mean, I've hotboxed, like, maybe twice, but that's not how it looked when I did it.
I've never hotboxed. I don't think. I don't remember.
It's pretty chill. You just kind of sit in, like, a weedy car. Yeah. Car that smells like weed. And I wrote, Andrew's being a little prick about it. And even the security guard is a lot nicer than any security guard at school I would have known. And he was like, dude, if you just parked across the street, it would have been chill because I have no jurisdiction, but you gotta come with me. And then Andrew like starts the car and like speeds off, like hurting this man. He gets like flown off the car.
Yeah.
And we pretty quickly find out when we cut back to the house that he got expelled.
Fuck. And, like, Bree's talking to Rex, and she wants to send Andrew to a detention center.
Yeah, because she's like, I've had these for a while, and, like, he clearly, like, it kind of made me sad, because I think she said something like, we clearly don't know how to help him. Like, he is unhappy, and we do not know what to do. And so, yeah, she has a bunch of different, like
flyers.
Detention centers. Yeah, and Rex is pretty uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, and there's, like, a really, like, sad line also that Bree says in this, where like Rex tries to say something and her response to him is, well, you're not the one that he hates.
Yeah, that made me sad.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it made sense to me where it's like all of Andrew's ire and hatred is out on Bree and not on Rex. And so Rex doesn't have to deal with the Andrew she has to deal with.
Which is interesting because like when Andrew found out that his dad was cheating on his mom, he was pretty anti-Rex.
Yeah, I guess he's back on Team Rex again.
Maybe because they're like living together
they're
again.
They're back together again, yeah. And I mean, well, she did have that talk with him where she was like, you know, we are going to respect your dad and you need to respect him. And Rex overheard that. So maybe Andrew's just taking that to heart and is respecting his father again.
And then we cut to the babies. Oh my God. They're doing a little play at school, like in the classroom about Paul Revere, and all the parents are watching. And then we see Marley Matlin.
Fucking like a very famous actress. Yes. Marley Matlin. And as I mentioned earlier, this is our second L Word actor.
Yes.
Because Marley Matlin played Jody on the L Word in like season 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, I think Jody's my favorite character on the L Word.
That's fair. I don't remember the L Word enough. I feel
she
like
was
I blocked
Bette's
it out.
Girlfriend.
Yeah, I knew. I know that.
Who like actually like had big top energy and like put Bette in her place, which I loved. And Marley Matlin's just a great like advocate and activist and like queer ally and like just a cool freaking person. So it was cool to see her on the show. I was like, hell yeah, I love her.
And Lynette is gay for this woman. I want to say one thing: Lynette and Marley Matlin's character, they want to.
They want to fuck
so bad.
I think it's very obvious in this next scene because them in this next scene, but a specific moment, is my lesbian of the episode nominee.
Oh yes,
agree. My only nominee. Maybe I would nominate the nurse because her hair is kind of gay, but this was like my main nominee.
Yeah, Marley Matlin is my lesbian of the episode. We can just call Marley Matlin in this episode.
We can't. Alyssa, if you will, her name's Alyssa.
Alyssa. Okay. Mm-hmm. We can call Alyssa
it was specifically
the episode right now.
For me, before we knew she had a husband, when she was like, let's have, when Lynette, we're getting into it later, because I want to talk about the rest of the scene, but when she's like, let's have a play date with the kids, and Marley Matlin's like, yeah, what about dinner for us? I was like,
yeah. And then Lynette is like, how about we keep it adults only?
I was literally like, yes, I kind of remembered she had a husband, but at this point we didn't know, and I was like, is Marley Matlin asking Lynette on a date? Is Alyssa? Is Lalissa? I don't know what their name would be.
Olnette?
All I know is I love them. And yes. I was like, ooh, asking on a date.
Lanissa.
Much? I was really worried it was going to be weird. Oh, Lanissa. You're right. Lanissa, my favorite ship of the season.
Sorry. Go on with what you were saying.
No, I was really worried because when at first I couldn't tell what Lynette's like face was saying when she was looking over at Jody signing with her daughter during the presentation. I thought Lynette was going to do a weird like, why are you talking in the middle of the presentation?
Yeah.
Like, that's why I was worried. And I was like, please don't be ableist,
hey,
Lynette. Fuck.
Hey, Alyssa, can you maybe shut the fuck up right now?
But that's not what it is. So she's kind of entranced by her lady love, Alyssa. And then they exchange like a smile with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Lynette approaches with Alyssa and, you know, like she tries to introduce herself through her daughter. And then Alyssa's like, I can read your lips. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and she kind of has her daughter translate for her because sometimes it's easier.
Yeah.
Just so people don't get misunderstood. She has a son named Matt. And then, yeah, they have that little exchange where, like, Alyssa basically asks Lynette on a date.
And Alyssa, I'm just going to say, is our lesbian of the episode.
Yes. Oh, for sure. Alyssa is the lesbian.
Just like throughout, we can post multiple pictures of her throughout the episode if we want, but Alyssa is lesbian.
She's
it. Can we get Marley Matlin on this podcast?
I would fucking shit to have Marley Matlin on the podcast.
I would love that.
She's so good.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what that scene is. And I love Alyssa. I wish she was around more. Spoiler alert. She won't be around much more, but I like her a lot. I'm excited to see what you think about the rest of this episode. Oof,
yeah.
Let's get into it.
And then we cut to the Solis house. And
yes.
Carlos is like, hell yeah, they're offering me a plea bargain. We're not like, we're good to go. That means they're ready to cave. And Gabby's like, great, so that means we don't have to lose the house. And Carlos says, no, we do have to lose the house. I have to pay the lawyers. I'm not going to take the plea. I'm not an idiot.
Jesus Christ.
And she's like, what do you mean? That is being an idiot. You have to take the plea. And he doesn't want to because then he'd be in jail for 8 months. It's
yeah.
only 8 months, Carlos.
Yeah, literally, like, I talked about it more later at the, like, funeral when they talk about it again. But, like, I agree with Gabby throughout this yeah. whole episode of, like, you are guilty is the thing. Yeah. Like, you're very guilty. You got us into this situation. And I think 8 months for something you are guilty of is worth it if it means you can keep your house for your family. Like, yeah. I think it is absolutely worth it. And so, yeah, I was, like, super annoyed by Carlos. I was like, dude, what? Is your pride worth that much to lose, like, your house and probably your wife?
Yeah.
But alas. It's
really interesting because the way that this scene ends felt like it was written to be for a commercial break. And you could obviously tell with the fade out that it mm-hmm. was a commercial break, but like the way it was written was like yes. for specifically like to hold that tension, because the scene ends with Gabby picking up the mm-hmm. phone because it's Turk on the other line.
Yeah, Turk is calling. Turk from Scrubs is
yeah,
calling.
Yeah, he tried to do some surgery on Mama last minute to help save her. But he basically tells her, we can assume
yes.
that Mama has passed away. And then it cuts to commercial.
Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah. And when we come back, we're still at the Solis house. Mm-hmm. And Carlos is looking at very expensive coffins that have, like, curtains and, like, yes. flood protectant.
yes.
And Gabby is like, you don't need this for her. Which I see what he's trying to do in this scene.
Yes.
Like, I got, like, it does a really good job of painting the picture that he just wants to give his mother, like, the utmost respect.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I mean, she was, like, his parent. Like,
yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, he had, like, an abusive dad in her.
He wants to give her the respect that he thinks she deserves. But still, they can't afford that shit.
Yeah, I think that there's a better way to have this conversation because, like,
yeah.
I think that, like, you know, like, your mom dying, especially if you were that close to her,
yeah.
like, I can imagine it's a really, really hard thing. And, like, he is the kind of person who likes to throw money at the things he loves. Gabby is a prime example of that. He likes
mm-hmm.
to give her as many big, expensive things as he can. But I also agree they can't afford it, but I also think that Gabby shouldn't super insult his, like, grieving style when it's your husband, it's your partner,
yeah.
and his mom died a day ago.
Yes, I agree.
So I think that there's a more, like, useful way for them to have had a conversation about it that...
Yeah,
that
wasn't just
yeah.
them kind of yelling at each other.
But I think that shows just how not great they are in their relationship right now. So I
yeah.
think it's just another notch in the belt of they are not good together right now.
Yeah, he does bring up, like, you never liked Mama.
Yeah, and she's like, she never liked me.
Yeah, sad. But also, Carlos is a bad man.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Lynette holding the envelope.
The die cat is back.
I was just going to say, this hat is very interesting.
Oh, I'm glad it came back.
It looks so weird. It looks so out of place compared to everybody else.
Oh, I love it.
I love it too.
The die cat.
We find out that Susan hasn't opened the envelope. She's, like, pretty scared to. And Bree interjects, because all the girls are back in town.
The girls are fighting. They're giving their opinions.
Bree is saying, like, honestly, like, I'm glad you haven't opened it, because give a man a pen and some paper, and who knows how well his lives can be.
Do you want to know what I wrote?
Sure.
I wrote, Edie's whole ass bra strap hanging down when I tell you I laughed.
I was like, I wrote all caps, Edie!
Edie's whole fucking bra strap just hanging out. I was living for it.
She looks good, though.
She looks hot. She looks so good.
I wrote she looks good.
Oh, I just want to do a shout out to all the Nicolette Sheridan stans on Twitter.
Oh, yes.
That we follow. I see you. And I just love Nicolette Sheridan so much.
I love how she's, like, becoming more of a group
yes.
member.
Oh, I want her to be a part of the squad more.
So
it's kind of... It also feels like... It's funny, because, like, in a lot of scenes where maybe Gabby isn't as present, she is. Because they are similar, right? In terms of, like, vain, hot ladies. And so it seems like maybe when Gabby's less available, they're making Edie sort of step into that position a little bit more. I would love for them all to be together because I like when Edie's more part of the group. I love it.
Yeah.
And then Bill drives by. He's Edie's contractor and just asks about a quick thing about the bathtub or something and gives a little bit of eyes to Susan.
This man looks exactly like Mike Delfino. I'll just say it. I'll say it.
Do you want to know what I wrote later in my notes?
Sure.
I have to go find it. I wrote, this guy looks like a poor man's Ewan McGregor and John Barrowman's baby.
That's exactly right.
And it was like a shot where I'm like, he looks a little like a wider-faced Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, but that's if you put a dash of John Barrowman in there.
Dressed so exactly like Mike Delfino and then at all Mike times.
Yeah. And then he's a poor man's of all these things. And it's this actor. Yes.
But like, even down to the, oh, he's not a plumber, he's a contractor. Like, this is...
Susan only likes men who know how to work on houses and do repairs.
Yes.
That, you know, hey, it's a good quality.
She needs somebody that can fix her.
It's like how most girls are like, I can fix him. She's like, no.
She's like, no, I need to be fixed. My bones just snapped in half after I flung myself through the ceiling. I need somebody who will be able to fix it.
I did like the line when Edie was like, yeah, we're sleeping together. We're kind of seeing each other. And Lynette was like, I thought you said you'd never mix business with pleasure.
I wrote this down too.
Never. No, I said never mix pleasure with commitment.
Oh, she
I
got.
Love her.
She has the one-liner. She
her
has the
one-liners
zing.
Are great. She's so zingy. I love my zing.
She's
queen.
Zesty.
She's the zing bot.
She's slorping and glorping.
She's slorping and glorping them zings. And there's still more of the scene. Sorry,
yes,
I distracted.
But I mean, like, basically, the scene is like Susan still doesn't open the envelope.
Well, she's like, I'm going to go rip it up right now. And then she runs
in. And
then
Lynette takes, and she's like, oh, I can do it right in front of you. And then Susan's like, oh, no, that's okay. Because she's not going to rip it up.
Yeah, she still wants the option of being able to do it.
Also,
I don't remember what she looked like, but I did write, Brie looked kind of hot in this shot.
Yeah,
see that. I think it was maybe when Brie was looking back at the door. I think I just thought she looked hot. thought I'd share because I wrote it down.
And then we cut to Gabby going to the hospital because she wants to make sure that nobody found out about her and John Tucker before Mama died. And we get this scene.
Specific.
Yeah. We get this scene of Gabby talking to the nurse, who we know as the audience saw Mama right as she died.
Mm-hmm.
But the nurse keeps looking at what I assume is a lawyer. Oh my god, if Scrubs and Desperate Housewives are in the same universe, then...
then Dr. Goldfine.
Dr. Goldfine.
Wait, he's secretly Ted. Do you think Dr. Goldfine is Ted's secret identity? So when he's not being the lawyer for the hospital, he's out being Dr. Goldfine?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Dr. Goldfine is his LARP, his confident LARP. The nurse is looking off to this, what I assume to be, is a lawyer.
Yeah, I assume.
I just assume, like, they're trying to make it look like Mama died peacefully so they don't have a lawsuit. Because if somebody finds out that Mama was out and, like, nobody was watching and, like, she fell because she fell down the stairs.
It's bad. It'd be bad for the hospital. And Ruth Ann, the nurse, is, like, the worst liar of all time. And I think that Gabby doesn't call her out on it now, but I think Gabby has picked up that something is not quite right with the story of how Mama died.
Yes. And then we cut to Susan. She is outside her house, and she sees that she has a flat tire, and that it was a nail. I was so worried that it was going to be, like, Bill, like, just flattened her tire so
I thought
he
that
would
Bill,
talk to her.
I thought that Bill just, like, I missed the fact that the tire was flat. I thought it was just sitting on her tire, and I thought that Bill just, like, left it as a calling card so she'd go over to him. It took me a while to connect that she was maybe got it stuck in her tire by driving around the neighborhood. Yeah. I thought that he just left it there as a creepy way of asking
her
out.
It was going to be like a creepy thing where he like punctured her tire. I was like, oh, so you got my message, Susan.
That's how I ask girls out.
Yeah, that's how I asked you out.
Yeah, I remember. It was like, you know, it was couple thousand dollars later, and I got
and
new tires.
And then I went,
will
you do a Desperate Housewives podcast?
Yeah. You just like you obliterated my tires, drained all my bank accounts. Yeah, all of them. That's why it was like a couple thou. Yeah.
That's why I live in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Anyway. But basically, Susan goes to Bill. We find out that it's Bill's nail. And I wrote in my notes, Susan, please don't date him. No. He makes a big show of being like, he goes back to like check on the tire and he's like, you know, I can do this patch, but you're really going to need to get it fixed. It's only going to have like 30 or 40 miles on it. And I wrote in my notes, since they're making a point of this, she's not going to get it fixed, huh?
Yeah.
But
I just don't understand why media was like, men being overly persistent is sexy.
I don't know, dude.
Because he was like, I'm going to call you tomorrow and I'm going to ask you on a date again. Like, he's just basically being like, he won't stop asking her until she says yes. Which
she's
is
like,
gross.
I need some space. And he's like, okay, I'll give you the space and be back tomorrow.
Yeah, like, that was so stupid. Liz, that was an excellent impression of that man.
Thank you.
Yeah, I fucking hated that. I was like, what? Like, this isn't sexy to me. Also, she literally was like, I got out of a complicated relationship.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be like, cool. This isn't right for right now then. Thank you. Goodbye.
And then we cut to dinner at the Scavo household with Alyssa, her husband, Tom, and Lynette, and it's going fine, and then they kind of, like, break off into these groups where Alyssa starts talking to Tom.
Yeah, does she work in advertising, I guess?
I guess.
Like he does? Because they worked at the same place, and that's sort of why Tom and Alyssa get really hyped about each other.
Probably. But then that means, like, Lynette is kind of left to just talk to the husband, and he starts shit-talking her, and he's like saying all this awful rude shit about her. Yeah. And Lynette's like, hey, maybe you should not say that while your wife is right there. And then he says, it's not like she can hear me anyways. Which is disgusting.
It was
and
so
I wish him to perish under
gross.
My thumb.
I would like him to meet my
We're
blade.
We're gonna have to do two memorial episodes because one is gonna be for him because I kill him.
Yes. Yeah, like, I cannot, like, just the gross ableist bullshit this man spouted about his wife was like sure, have your marital problems, but one, as Lynette points out later, dumping them on a complete stranger is wild.
Yeah,
because he really is like, he's like, here are our issues, we're in counseling, it's not working, and he's just dumping all this personal information on her and then is an ableist asshole about his wife. I was like, that's so gross. Divorce this man, he will meet my blade.
He will perish under our thumbs.
And then quickly after work, because Lynette's just flabbergasted, clearly, we cut to post-dinner, and Lynette has clearly told Tom about what, I think I wrote down his name later, Dennis, what Dennis said. And Tom is like, that sucks. Oh my God, that's awful that he said that. Like, I wish I had known before inviting them to play tennis with us. And Lynette's like, well, I couldn't really say anything. She, you know, she was right there, and he was right there. But like, so we find out kind of that they have plans to do more coupley things, but Tom is like, man, I really liked Alyssa. That sucks that her husband's an asshole. And I wrote, Tom liked Alyssa. Lynette's in love with Alyssa. Bring her into the marriage as a third, and it'll be good for everyone.
Yes.
Get rid of Dennis, and then we just have a throuple. It's just Tom, Lynette, and Alyssa.
But Tom also, because Lynette says we should tell her, Tom kind of calls her out for always trying to meddle in other people's business and is like, maybe you shouldn't, that's their marriage. How about I just say something to him next time he does it?
Yeah, he's like, man to man, I'll call him out on it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, Tom, you have the backbone of a noodle. I don't think you will do that, sir.
Yeah.
He does one cute thing. I will give Tom a single cute point when he learned to sign I love you to Lynette, and there was like parts I liked Tom this episode, and that was a part that I liked him.
Remember when he did something? Anyway, the next scene is
I haven't talked about it.
The next scene is Andrew. He's he needs $40 for date money, basically, because he's meeting Justin at the mall. And she goes, no, you're not getting allowance anymore. Take the trash out. And he's like, well, if I'm not getting an allowance, then I'm not going to take the trash out.
When she says something like, I forget what leads to this, but he's like, you can't, what are you going to do to me? Torture me? You can't do anything to me. And Brie, I actually really liked this moment from her because I think she's so exhausted and does not know what to do about Andrew. And she goes in front of him and she's like, I just want you to be happy. All I want is for you to be happy. And I do not know how to help you. And it hurts me. Wrong. Yeah. She's like, I just don't know how to help you because I love you and I want you to be happy. And Rex walks in the doorway and begins to hear this.
Yeah.
And then it escalates so much.
It truly does. These scenes make me as a person feel a little weird.
Yeah.
Because I honestly, like, these scenes are meant to paint the picture for you to feel bad for, like, Brie because she has a difficult child. And, like, mm-hmm. He's going through stuff, but, like, that he shouldn't act like that. But also, Andrew does remind me of me.
Yeah.
Like, when I would live at home. Yeah. Because it's, like, I mean, like, he's a gay kid. And he feels like he can't be out at home because he's terrified of what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that could be a reason for acting out. There's, like, a thing that can happen where it's, like, your parents could be, like, yeah, we love you and this and blah, blah, blah. But it also depends on your personal experiences with them and if you actually believe it.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, there could be thoughts, like, me growing up in the household that I did, there would be, like, moments where, a parental figure would be like, listen, we'll always love you. But in the back of your head, you're like, but that's not true. Because if I was anything other than what you wanted me to be, you wouldn't be treating me the same way.
Yeah, I feel like, and my mom is gay, so I didn't even super have this experience to, like, such a big extent. But, like, a lot of my friends did. My partner did. The idea that, like, yeah, like, for so many queer people, their parents' love is conditional. Mm-hmm. And it sucks that it's, like, conditional on just you being yourself.
Yeah.
And even if they say it's not, you know better. You know it is there. And so for a lot of queer people who don't have supportive families, like, it is hard to be, especially his age, and know that that love is conditional even when it's not supposed to be. It is supposed to be unconditional. It is supposed to be true. That is your parent, the person that birthed you. And to know that just, like, something about you can make them not love you anymore, it's heartbreaking and awful. Mm-hmm. And, like, so many queer kids have to deal with that, and it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see if they explore that more with Andrew, like, as, because, like, Susan obviously found out, but so far nobody else knows, right? Like, Brie and Brie and Rex don't even know. They just think
Susan
he's a bad kid.
Being an ally and not
Susan is
him.
A queen ally. So I'm interested to see, because I mean, obviously, like, it's gonna come out eventually. I'm interested to see how they handle it with Brie and Rex, Andrew's sexuality, because I doubt they're gonna take it well. But I'm hoping we see we see growth, or we see at least something that isn't just every other coming out story, you know?
Yeah. But I really, like, feel a lot of, like, when Andrew ever is like, I don't want to talk to you. Get away from me.
Yeah.
Because, like, literally, I've had those experiences.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, I watched this episode with my girlfriend, and it was a very, like, double-edged sort of, like, I understand, like, the frustration Bree's having, and I don't agree with a lot of the ways Andrew's acting out, because maybe I was just a very, very, like, mild child. But I also understand all the hurt he's holding in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, yeah, it's really complicated.
I don't know. It's like the way he's acting out is, like, self-destructive in a way that's, like, it's just interesting. It just seems self-destructive a little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like you can have, like, a lot of self-destructive tendencies, or, like, a lot of, like, just because there's so much, like, pain in you. But the ways in which you decide to act on them are always different. And I think this is an interesting way that the television show is going.
Yeah, and so, like, what makes the scene escalate is when Brie is standing at the foot of Andrew's bed and pleading to help him. He pushes her away, like, a little aggressively with his foot. It kind of looked silly, honestly, the way they shot it.
Yeah.
But Brie goes, like, flying out the window, fucking sailing. It's the same director, so maybe that's just the...
Bree and Susan, the gifts side by side,
go flying through the wall. And Rex, like, snaps, runs in, grabs Andrew, and throws him against the wall, which is never an okay thing to do to your fucking child. And basically threatens him and is like, if you ever touch your mother like that again, like, I will throw you through this wall because everyone in this show must go through a wall at least once. I will toss you into outer space.
You can meet Susan up there.
You can meet Susan and in outer space. But yeah, I mean, I made light of it. But like Rex, like,
yeah, it's pretty scary.
It's pretty scary. Like it escalated so wildly quickly. And it's
and like,
yeah,
you can tell the look that Andrew gives Bree after Rex does that is like, you're turning him against me now.
Yeah,
like, that's what it felt like. That's what the look felt like to me.
No, I agree, because it's very interesting. God, it's deliciously complicated. I think this storyline is very sad and interesting because Bree has felt so alone. And so that shift, right? How, yes, in Andrew's brain, he's saying like, oh my gosh, someone who was my ally is gone because of you. And later we see Bree being like, this is the first time I have felt like I have a partner in a long time. It's very interesting. I mean, like, it really does feel like this is the first time Rex has decided to take Bree's side with something.
Yeah.
Even though I don't agree with how he did it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're right. It's just, it's an interesting shift that Rex has taken.
Yes. Yes. And then we cut to Susan catching up with Edie and asking if she can go on a date with Bill. And Edie says no.
Yeah. Edie's like, thanks for asking. I would rather you not. Thank you.
Yeah. And then Susan doesn't like that. I don't think Susan's ever been told no in her life.
Probably not.
Because she's like, but I want to. You know, I don't have to do this. I don't have to ask for your permission. And Edie is like,
weird.
Edie turns to her and says, you know, I so much want to like you, but you just won't let me, huh? Like, I'm just trying so hard.
Yeah. Like
Edie, I want to be your friend. And yet you turn around and do something like this, and it makes me not want to be your friend.
And I agree with Edie. Like, truly, like, respect those boundaries. Like, and I know that, like, Susan gets pissy because Edie's like, I don't even super want him, but, like, I have been with him, and I would like you to not sleep with the person who works for me. And, like, I think it's a valid request. And, yes, Susan... just saying that weird line, like I agree with Edie. Has been like Edie in her own way, right? She's always gonna insult. She's always gonna be undercutting because that's the kind of friend she is. Her and the Hoobs had that friendship.
Yeah,
and she's trying to be a friend of Susan, and Susan is truly fucking her over all the time. And I think I wrote like, you know, you took Mike when Edie wanted him, and now you want Bill when Edie wants, like. Just like leave, like you maybe don't need to take everything from Edie all the time.
Literally. Susan's like, what, if you can't have him, nobody can? And Edie's like, now you're getting it.
Which I mean, thought was funny. I mean, like, that's what,
but
I
like,
don't know. I
feel you like should just be able to respect your, if you're actually friends with this person, you should be able to respect those boundaries.
It's friend code. Don't.
And it's like, it's not
where
like,
your friends have been.
It's not like you have been hanging out with this guy, you know, his friends, and you're like, oh, I think I actually like him. It's just a random man who asked you out on a date.
He's not worth it. He's not worth ruining a friendship over because you barely know this man. And then cut to the funeral. Everyone was kind of having conversations and I did not write them down.
Yeah, I just wrote Brie hat watch.
Wrote Edie's hat is wild.
Oh,
I wrote that.
I didn't notice that. We should have side by
side. Side by side hats, hat watch. That's the only thing. I also wrote Julia's being realistic and mature per usual.
What if we, I don't know if we ever started that Instagram Brie hat watch thing.
I will continue to add to it.
But what if we changed it to just a generic hat watch?
Hat watch.
And then we could have the Lynette like baseball hat.
I like that. That's a good taste. I like that a lot. Hashtag hat watch.
There's a funny one-liner that Bree said where it's, you gotta hand it to the Catholics, they do grief better than anyone.
And then Gabby sees that Carlos bought Mama an entire fucking crypt,
but and he tries to excuse it by being like, don't worry, it's a used crypt.
I got a great deal in this crypt. And they storm off to fight, and there's a kind of pretty funny bit where the funeral march is like, are we supposed to go over here? So the funeral march starts to follow Gabby and Carlos fighting, and then Bree turns into a flight attendant and is like, we're walking towards the crypt, follow the body this way. The exits are to your left and your right and all around you. We're outside. Let's keep moving. Let's go. That's my number one impression.
That is a very good, I thought that you were Marsha Cross.
Marsha Cross as a flight attendant specifically.
Yeah.
I am looking.
I'm looking.
Marsha Cross.
Head Marsha full Cross, of I would, only that image.
I would not kick her out of bed for leaving crumbs or whatever that
saying is.
And where were we? I'm just thinking of Marsha Cross as a flight attendant now.
Yeah, that's the only image in my brain.
Only brain. Brain empty.
We cut to...
Oh, no. Carlos and Gabby are fighting about money still.
Yes.
And yeah, so Gabby and Carlos are fighting, and she wants him to take the plea. And she's like, I want the same respect you give your dead mom, and you're guilty. So, like, it should not be that bad to only serve 8 months for something you are guilty for. And once again, I wrote, this is valid.
Yes.
I agree with Gabby, for sure.
And then we cut to tennis after the funeral. We're at tennis with Alyssa, Brenston, her husband, Tom and Lynette. What? Brenston, right? Oh, Dennis. And basically, like, he's still just being a massive shit talker.
Yeah.
And Tom doesn't do anything about it.
Because he's a noodle. Also,
Lynette's outfit, I'd like to point out Lynette's outfit down to the tennis racket all, like, go together. It's like a complete outfit, complete with tennis racket.
She was ready. She was ready for a fucking tennis match. And they go, I guess, taking a quick break or post one of their games to get some water. And he is still being a total shit. And Lynette gets into it with him. She's like, stop unloading this on a total stranger. Get some help. Clearly your counseling isn't working. And I'm uncomfortable by the shitty things you're saying about your wife, about your relationship. Like, stop. And he seems kind of flabbergasted until Alyssa and Tom come back in the conversation so that they can keep playing tennis. And that's kind of all we get. Basically, Lynette yells at him.
Yeah.
And then the scene ends.
And then we cut to Susan and Bill. He asks her out again, and she's like, no. And he's like, am I hideous? And then I say, yes, you are.
You're no Mike Delfino.
You're no dreamy Mike Delfino.
You're no dreamboat boy that we love. You are. You cannot hold a candle. Bill cannot hold a candle.
No.
Not to our little Mikey Poo.
He's never even seen a candle.
He's never seen a candle. Mikey Poo makes candles.
Yes.
That's how many candles he can hold.
But basically, she does say yes at the end of the scene.
Yes. She ends up, like, looking over at the letter and then being like, you know what? Yeah.
And then we cut to Carlos, and he's making an emergency list for his teenage daughter. Sorry, for his wife.
Oh my god, Liz.
Sorry. Is that too much?
No, it's fine.
Because we find out that he's taking the plea bargain.
Thank fucking god, Carlos.
And he's like, I'm only taking it if, one, you promise me that you'll be here when I come back. And she says, yes, of course. And then he says, and I also need you to promise that you will be faithful to me. And she goes, Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
And he calls himself. He's like, I am a jealous and a possessive man, Gabrielle. And so I need you to be faithful for me because God knows what I'll do if I find out that you're not.
My little fingies are itching to do a murder. My little fingies are itching for another hate crime. If you cheat on me, these fingies can't be stopped.
They can't be stopped.
They can't be tamed.
I can't be tamed.
But Gabby agrees. I think she wants the house more than she wants anything else. So she agrees, and they kiss and hug. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe they're being sweet. And then Carlos was, like, threatening her at the end while he was holding her. He's like, I'm gonna hold you to that promise, Gabrielle. And I was like, Jesus fucking Lord, Carlos.
And then
the next scene is
cut to
Bree and Rex.
Bree and Rex waking Andrew up.
In the middle of the night.
And he's like, oh, hey. And
they were like, hey, we were thinking about sending you away to a camp. And he's like, no, I would not like that. And they were like, yeah, cool, it's sorry. Too late.
Bree literally says, sorry, honey, but you don't have a choice. That's so fucked up. And two men come in. And, like, he tries to get up. And, like, they grab him and are, like, restraining him so he can't, like leave or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, listen, I'm sorry. Like, I'll be better. And she goes up to him and he spits in her face.
My jaw dropped when he spit in her face. I could not believe that. That was wild.
I feel so sad for him.
Yeah, I feel so sad for him. I was also just, like, totally shocked that he, like, spit on his mom.
Yeah.
It's a lot. I'm very curious what they're gonna do with this. Like, I just saw that, like, in my book, I didn't write the full quote, but Mark Cherry, you know, obviously, like, Bree is based on his mother, and he is, Andrew's based on him, in a way. I don't know if Mark Cherry was this type of child exactly. I don't want to make any claims about him. But that is, he's been pretty open about the inspiration for Andrew being him. And he said he never went to one of those camps, but he saw them, like, advertised a lot where he grew up. And he was just so curious what kids had to do, how bad kids had to be sent to those places, which is why he wanted to explore it with Andrew.
Okay.
Which is interesting. But, yeah.
This kid is an actor.
He's a good actor.
Can we get him on this show?
He's just chilling as far as I know. He's real quick. Okay, if you look him up on Instagram, he's pretty hot.
I think he showed me him.
He got pretty, like, scruffy and hot. He's like a model, kind of. I think he ended up having some drug issues, but now he's clean and happy and hot. So, way to go, Sean Pyfrom. He's a really good actor.
Hell yeah.
Let's get everyone on this show. Andrew Bowen, Sean Pyfrom, Marley Matlin. It'll be great.
Please, one day. And then, just that scene is just so heartbreaking.
Yeah, and then we see the next morning, that this is sort of what I talked about earlier, where Bree and Rex, they look really sad, and they're hugging each other, and this is where Bree is like, this is the first time in a long time I felt like I have a partner.
Yeah.
And I wrote, I can't believe traumatizing their kid will bring their love together.
Finally, we get the reconciliation that we didn't get, like, five episodes ago.
All we needed to do was traumatize Andrew.
Yeah. And then we cut to the babies and Lynette with her GF. And Alyssa's like, I need to talk to you. And they go
and they go make out.
And they make out and they fuck and they run away. And if anybody's ever seen the movie The Handmaiden, it's exactly like that.
Wait, my fanfic's going to be Alyssa and Lynette.
We should look and see if there is any.
I will write it if it doesn't exist.
But basically, she starts blowing up, and she's like, Dennis left me because of you. You told him our counselor wasn't working. You told him all of this shit. And, like, who are you to step into my marriage at that point? And, like, they bring in the kid to translate a little bit.
Trying to be like, I think it's supposed to be funny, but I was like, this is weird.
Yeah, and then, like, Lynette's like, should your kid be, like, should you be saying this in front of your kid? Because my note was like, I hope the kid knows that
the parents are getting divorced.
Because, like, that would be bad. But, like, basically, Alyssa's like, stop telling me how to raise my kid now? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And then they start making out.
Then they start making out, yeah. And Alyssa said something I find interesting, where she was like, you have this need to be a white knight, and you wanted to ride it on your horse and rescue me, but I did not need rescuing. I did not ask for it, and I did not want it. And I was like, I think that's a very interesting, like, way of viewing Lynette's character, because I do think she's really, really protective of her, like, friends and her children, to a fault, I think. And, like, the thing is, it's like, I feel like this man, I think Dennis, was just using Lynette as an excuse to get out of that marriage, because he is the one who said the counseling wasn't working. And it's like, girl, do you want to be married to someone like him that is, like, ableist and shitty behind your back? Like, I just feel like Lynette's getting too much shit for this, when it's like, I don't know. If I was married to someone like that, I would want to know they were saying these things about me.
Yeah.
To my friends.
But it's okay, because we never see these people again. That's spoiler true. Alert. And then we cut to, I love, what's the guy's name? Bill.
Bill, yes.
So Bill has been just being like, listen, it's not a date. I just want to get a burrito with someone. Like, it's just a burrito. And then cut to their date, and it's them getting a burrito at this fancy fucking restaurant.
Her margarita.
Like, he's wearing, like, a sports jacket. Oh, to have a margarita.
Oh, yeah. It looked like a really, really fancy restaurant, but she had a margarita as if she was, like, at an On the Border. Yeah. So I was kind of confused where they were. I'm like, are you at Chili's? Like, where are you?
You know what we should do?
What?
We should record an episode where we drink margaritas while we record.
Absolutely. I would love to be drunk during an episode of Desperate Housewives.
We can do it.
I then wrote, oh, well, yeah, well, so they're in this fancy fucking restaurant, and it becomes pretty evident that Susan has just been talking about Mike the entire time.
Yes.
And then Edie walks up and looks pretty sexy.
Yeah, she felt the stench of betrayal.
Et tu, Suze? But Edie makes the biggest fucking power play. She walks in, she's like, hey, Susan, hate you for life. Hey, Bill, you don't have a job anymore. Toodaloo. And then just, like, leaves.
This is such a fucking good scene.
Anything Edie's in is better by just default.
A fucking goddess, dare I say.
I
goddess
love her
Edie.
So much. She's, like, my favorite character.
Yes. We've switched from Goddess Lynette to Goddess Edie.
Goddess Edie. Ugh. Growth.
Because it's another commercial break, and then we cut to Susan and Bill in the car, and he's telling her that, like, she invites drama in, and I think that's, like, a really good thing. Not, like, he's being an asshole. He's not being a good thing. But she does. Like, she's a messy bitch who loves drama.
Yeah, I mean,
like, even in the beginning of the episode, she was dreaming up, like, dramatic scenarios where Mike would come back and just, like, just be very dramatic, and, like, they'd start making out, and, like, she'd get swept off of her feet ultimately. Like, she does like drama.
Yeah, and, like, I think she does, as Edie points out multiple times, she likes to play this, like, innocent card a lot. Mm-hmm. But she also, it's funny that, like, they're saying Lynette is the nosy one, when, like, Susan puts her nose in, like, everyone's fucking
literally.
Shit. Like, truly, like, stalked Paul in a car and, like, broke into a freaking mental institution to talk to Zach. Like, we love the detective Suze, but that does mean she's, like, nosy and gets involved in a lot of drama because she's a detective.
Mm-hmm.
And she does try to play it off as if she's, like, an innocent bystander in a lot of the situations she's in. And it's like, girl, you put yourself there a lot.
Yeah.
And also, I kind of agreed with Bill here, weirdly, that he was like, you knew Edie was going to be mad, and you still said yes, and you didn't tell me Edie would be mad. Because, like, he lost his job, which kind of sucks. So it's like, he was probably been like, if I had known Edie would be angry, I wouldn't have gone on a date with you. I mean, he could have asked Edie herself, but... Yeah, I kind of thought he was pretty valid in that moment. I was like, yeah, that makes sense that, like, it's kind of shitty that Susan didn't tell him that.
Susan did not get her tire fixed.
No.
It pops and they die.
They die, and that's the end of the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, she tries to drive off the road because the car fucking tire explodes. And he's like, on top of everything, you didn't even get your fucking tire taken in. And that was sort of the button for that scene.
Yeah. Mackenzie.
Yeah.
Am I a bad person? Am I bad?
You're a bad boy.
Oh my god.
We
cut to Tom and Lynette in bed, and Lynette finds herself asking that same question, but less sexy, to Tom.
R.I.P.
More serious, less sexy. And he's like, you're not a bad person, you just have a strong sense of what's right.
Yeah, I actually really liked this scene a lot between Tom and Lynette, because I remember when we started the series, as someone who's watched a lot later in the series, I remember liking Tom and Lynette, and as we've seen some of the stuff in season one, I was like, why did I like Tom? And it's moments like these that makes me like Tom and Lynette, because I did like that he was like, she was like, I just feel bad that I hurt her, and I feel bad that I meddled, and he's like, you know, I tried to tell you, but I do admire that you wanted to help your friend, because when it came down to the wire, I wasn't able to step up and speak out on it. And so, like, I think I admire that you have that sense of right and wrong.
don't know. I thought it was a sweet scene with the two of them, yeah. And then they sign languaged stuff, and it was kind of snarky and cute.
It was cute because she was like, "I love how you can always find a way to compliment me instead of saying I told you so." And then he signs, and she's like, "Did you just tell me I told you so?" And he's like, "There's no way to prove it."
I thought it was cute. I really enjoyed that. And now I'm like, "What did you do that you told your dad about, you piece of shit?"
Yeah, remember when he did something? Anyway, we cut to the lawyer from the hospital talking to Gabby. This man was in Disney Things. I don't remember what Disney Things he was in.
I can look it up. He was in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
He was the dad in Eddie's Million Dollar Cook-Off.
Oh, was he?
And he was also in High School Musical 2.
He was in High School Musical 2, yeah.
But I most recognize him from the dad in Eddie's Million Dollar Cook-Off.
He's been in a lot of things.
Yeah, he's like a character actor.
Yeah, I've definitely seen him in like a zillion fucking things. His character is
usually a straight man.
The hardest role to play of all. Yes. A white straight man.
But basically, like, this scene is Gabby finding out that everything is not as it seems.
Ooh.
And, and they want to offer her a settlement so she doesn't talk.
And sue the hospital.
Yeah. And she's like, okay, start talking then.
Hell yeah. Yeah, truly. She's like down for it.
And then the next scene is her in like talking to her lawyer in the car and is like, listen, I love scratch offs. If I want a scratch off right now, say random number, 1.6 million.
That's so much fucking money.
Yes. 14, 15, 16. Anyway, she's like, if I got that money now, would the government be able to take it away? Yeah? Okay, but what if I won when Carlos was in jail? We could keep the money? Thanks.
And I like this this acting you just did. That was tasty.
Thank you.
Yeah, Gabby is trying to figure out how to keep that money to herself. Here's the
thing is like, I think it's interesting that it could be for herself.
Or maybe she'll share it with him when he gets out.
The thing is, if she wanted to share it, I don't know why she would keep it a secret from him. Because she could be like, listen, you go to jail, we can have $1.6 million when you're out. Maybe she is trying to keep it from him. Because if he thinks that she gets that money while he's in jail, she'll leave him.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that, but that's probably exactly what he's going to think. Ooh, buddy, I hope we get into it next episode. Oh, shit.
And then we get the reprise of the hero speech from Mary Alice in the beginning of the episode. And, like, the bravery, goodness, and stuff is all attached to a shot of the husbands, which I thought was very funny because all of these men are awful. But it ended on, like, a really bittersweet note where, like, sometimes, like, the hero, like, sometimes there's not always someone there to rescue you. And, like, sometimes you gotta be the hero and rescue yourself. And the episode kind of ends with Susan slipping Mike's envelope back under his door and walking away. And he sees that, like, it's unopened still.
Yeah. And that's the epi.
That's the epi.
I think it was a pretty good episode. It wasn't one of my favorites, but it was, like, a solid episode.
Yeah, it was pretty solid.
It's pretty solid. And on that note, we're Desperate Housedykes. And if you want to find us on the social medias, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Desperate Dykes or on our website, DesperateHousedykes.com.
Please go check out our website. It's gorgeous. Mackenzie spent 15 years on that website. And guess what's on that website?
We were building the website when Desperate Housewives premiered. Yes. And then it wasn't ready until 2020.
Yes. Yeah. We have a shop on that website.
We do. We have merch. Beautiful merch.
I'm wearing the Abstinence Club shirt now. Wah! It's beautiful. It looks good. It looks great, dare I say, in gray.
Oh, it's very, it looks very good on you. I agree.
It looks so good. And if you buy something from our store, when you get it in, if you posted like a little picture of the merch or you in the merch, like on social media, we would love to see it and share it.
Someone posted a photo in their Abstinence Club shirt and it was so good.
It was so
good. You all look so juicy. I love it.
You look so juicy. If I could just take a bite out of you all.
If you're in Chicago, I'll bite you.
As long as it's consensual. If you want to find us personally on social media, I'm Liz, and you can find me on truly any form of social media at The Pigeon Wizard.
And I'm Mackenzie. You can find me on Twitter at Mackenzie Wilkes.
And there's just like a Mackenzie!
What? What's up,
Liz? I almost forgot.
Yeah.
We love reviews.
Oh, yes.
We do. We love them. And I almost forgot. How could I forget? We love reviews. We love when you write us anything on iTunes. And it helps people find the show, actually, if you leave us a review. So if you want to share this show with more people, the more reviews we
get. Give us a little review.
The more friends we have.
And it puts a smile on our face.
Yeah, that's the most important part. And... you know, we usually ask a question at the end of each episode. Last week was, who would you go to jail with and why? Mm-hmm. For Desperate Housewives? And this week I think it should be...
How about, what scenario would Desperate Housewives director Jeff Melman have you fly through a wall during? Because he has had he has had Susan fly through a wall, he has had Brie almost fly out a window, he has had Mama fly through a doorway down a staircase. What scenario in Desperate Housewives would specifically director Jeff Melman,
yes,
direct you flying out of a wall?
Oh, what would yours be?
I think that, so it's, if it's me, right, I'm playing, yeah, me, I'm coming onto the lane and I am jogging,
yeah,
in the neighborhood. And I am jogging on the sidewalk and Edie is arriving home and, yeah, she opens up the car door. I'm not paying attention. I slammed the car door and the impact makes me go flying through Edie's garage door.
Oh my God.
And director Jeff Melman goes, cut. That was incredible. One take Wilkes over here.
One take Wilkes. I think mine would be... I am walking in the middle of the street.
Okay.
Right? It's nighttime. Okay. It's winter in Wisteria Lane.
Jeff Melman's behind the camera.
Jeff Melman is behind the camera. And I like, there's something missing from the scene that I'm in, right?
Okay.
And I'm walking down. And Jeff Melman actually comes up behind me and pushes me. And I go flying into the earth, down to the center, into the lava.
Jeff Melman throws you through
the ground?
And then
Jeff Melman yells, cut, we got it. That's what we needed out from this scene.
That is such a bad one, but it's all I could think of this week.
It's okay. It's fun.
You can just leave a review, just period.
You can just leave us a normal review. We say we always ask a question. You never have to answer them.
Never.
But, I mean, I think it's fun.
It is fun.
Like, not every single question's going to be a winner, but I'm going to say that I liked this question. Oh,
thank you for that validation, Liz.
Is there only a few more things?
I think there's only a few more things left to say.
It's a little Desperate House cleaning. Mackenzie, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart that I love you so much.
Oh my God, Liz, I love you a lot. I love you so much.
It's just great to be in love, you know?
It's great to be just deeply, deeply in love with you.
Deeply in love with you.
Yeah.
To know that we have this podcast together.
I love it.
I love it.
I love it.
I love it. I love you.
Love you.
And guess what, everybody?
Everybody else?
Everybody else, please.
Please.
I'm gonna start crying. Everybody, you have, please, from me.
Okay.
Everybody, please stay juicy. Just like, please.
Stay.
From the bottom of my heart.
Stay juicy. Stay juicy.
Stay juicy. Real quick.
could see your tears, yes.
I think
Juice!